This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, June 20th, and it's a little after 11 a.m. in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Mary, and I shall be your host for today as we speak to Dolita Datus, who is a volunteer coordinator for Ubuntu, mobilizing Central Alberta, Canada. She's a Bahamian friend I know who lives abroad. She lives in Canada, who's doing some unique things, and I wanted to know how can such apply to the Bahamas. So, Dolita, I call her Datus, by the way, is on Zoom. I just wanted to formally introduce herself and to also explain what is Ubuntu, because that sounds Swahili. Right? And because I recognize it through my, anyway, black activism type thing. But without further ado, Datus, tell me about yourself and how did you get this job that you do have?
Good morning, Marianne. Good morning, Bahamas. My name is Jota Datus, and I like to refer to myself as a Bahamian, even though I don't have the papers to show it. But I was raised in the Bahamas, born in Haiti, and I now live in Canada. The word Ubuntu, you are correct, is from an African philosophy, so it's a way of life. And I believe it's South African, Tanzanian, and some of the other African countries there. And basically what it means is I am because you are. So I am human because you are human. And you are human because I am human. So I can't treat you inhumanly in a way that's not humane without doing the same to myself. And it is a nonprofit organization that was founded by myself and one of my really good, amazing friends. She's a sister to me. Her name is Sadia Anwar. And together we created something that we saw that was missing in the region where we're living. So we saw that there was a need for it. And instead of waiting for other people to do the work for us, we was like, okay, let's do it ourselves. So that's a little bit about my organization.
So Ubuntu is an NGO. What is its agenda? What is it that it does in Canada?
So it is a registered nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And basically what we do is we like to say that we do the unsexy things, the unsexy work of nonprofit. And essentially what that means is we work with what people will call marginalized groups. Sorry. As well as we work with people where there are no boxes for them. So you walk into an office and they're asking you your story, what you need help with, and there's not a box for you to fill out because you don't fit into that box. And those are the people that we help, as well as young people. So we do things like court support. We do advocacy work in helping people navigate the justice system. So these are newcomers to Canada, people who migrated to Canada, somehow is in the legal system, was charged with parking tickets, didn't know they had to pay them or where to pay them, and just helping them navigate those systems because we take it for granted that everyone just knows how to navigate these systems. We work closely with law enforcement here as well to try and mediate between community and law enforcement, because a lot of people don't recognize the fact that not everyone has a good relationship with police. And so tempers are sometimes flared and suddenly, you know, there's a case of police brutality or assault. And so what we do is we go in and we mediate between community and law enforcement or community and health services to say, hey, these people have a reason why there's a fear of police or there's a fear of going to the hospitals for help or helping parents navigate this education system for their children. So it's all of those things combined. The work looks different depending on the day. But I enjoy what I do because it's always something that I've always wanted to do.
So is that advocacy group and like a community organizer, organizing type work?
Yes. So it's a community advocacy organization.
Okay. And I know earlier you started off the conversation like as you would like to consider yourself Bahamian, but I knew you all my life. I mean, I knew you when you were about 3, 4, 5, you know, and going to see our Walker. You are Bahamian. And you have the culture. You eat the crab and rice. You eat the conch salad.
I don't eat crab and rice. I'm Seventh-day
Adventist. That's my point. No, don't let your old lady hear me say that. But my point is that you grew up here and you share the culture.
I do. My sister went to see our Walker. I went to GH. Mm-hmm. I am in every sense of the word, I am Bahamian, but I wasn't born in the Bahamas and I was never naturalized as a Bahamian. Plus, even if I was to, there would still be people who's like, your last name is Dadas. That ain't no Bahamian name.
My Dadas ain't no Bahamian name.
Before, right? Yeah. And so even though I have the lived experience as a Bahamian, I've done as many Bahamian things as could possibly be, but because of who my parents are and because of where I was born, because of my last name, I don't think that I would ever be considered to be Bahamian or like people say true Bahamian. So that's why I put the little caveat at times.
Yes, excellent. And the reason why I invited you to have this conversation, right, because we've been talking off air in terms of can an organization like what you have in Canada, Alberta, can that exist in the Bahamas? Is it needed in the Bahamas? And see, you come from a marginalized group in the Bahamas who's culturally different and who share similar experiences like some of the people you help in Canada. And I'd like to know, can this organization, a similar organization, be birthed in the Bahamas?
I think it can. The work that I do here is what I've always wanted to do back home, and back home as in the Bahamas. However, it is the most thankless job. Like, it is the most heartbreaking job or work that one can do, because it tends to feel, as if you're always pushing against this brick wall, right? Like you're always fighting and pushing back. But I think it can exist. I believe that it should exist. However, somebody has to be willing to do the backbreaking work. Like somebody has to say, okay, I'm going to give 5 to 10 years of my life, put in my money in an organization, to do this work. And so far it's difficult. And it's very difficult also to start an NGO in the Bahamas within that, that realm of things. Like I've looked over and over online to see how to start. First of all, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Secondly, there isn't funding and grants as much to sustain it, because Canada has a very different system. The Canadian government will give you funds to do the work that the Canadian government cannot or are not able to do at the moment. So if there's a need and an organization recognizes that they are able to fulfill that need. So for example, if it has to do with people who are hearing impaired or deaf, right? The Canadian government will say, okay, fine, as long as you're a legally registered organization and you are in good standing and you want to fill in this gap, apply for funding. And if it's a need, you will be funded, right? You could be funded for 3 to 5 years. Whereas at home, it doesn't quite work that way. And even to get startup as a new organization is expensive. I think the last time I looked, it would have maybe run you into $5,000. Mm. So somebody has to do it. I don't know if it's going to be, I don't know if it will be me, but somebody has to do it, or a group of people have to be able to say, okay, we're going to put in 5 to 10 years of hard work, sweat and tears and our own funding to get this together.
So what type of training seminars have you attended to make yourself proficient to say that I can do this?
So first of all, I think both Sadia, my co-founder, and myself, we have the lived experience.
Explain that.
So lived experience means we've lived through the systems that we are now working in. Because that is better than just having the academics, right? Like you could have the academic, you could be a doctor of whatever, but if you don't have the lived experience, you don't understand what that person is saying. You don't understand what the person is going through. So both Sadia and I do understand what it's like to have to learn English as a second language. Mm-hmm. Her first language was not English, neither was it mine. We both understand having to come from immigrant family to migrating to being feeling left out, to having to translate for parents at school or translate for parents at the hospital or whatever, wherever they are. She's of a minority religion and so am I. Like, so we have those lived experience to be able to understand what these people are also going through. In addition to that, Sadia is a professional and she works with sexual assault victims. Mm-hmm. And myself, when I went through university, I'm not completed yet, but I also did the humanities and I did human rights training to understand what it means and how to help people and various other trainings so that in addition to having the lived experience that we also had the languages that organizations and governments were speaking. So when we do appear with someone to help them navigate whichever system they are in, we know exactly what to do. We know how to work the system. We know who to speak to. And so it was a lot of work, a lot of training, constant training, because things change every day. But yeah, I think our lived experience combined with our professional experience is what allows us to do what we do.
Okay, in the Bahamas, we have a number of I'm trying to get the right word for it. Disability groups and vulnerable groups. That's the right word I wanted. And I want to know, how can we replicate what you are doing there in Canada, here in the Bahamas? What do you think some of the first things we should, activists who are here, advocates who are here, who wants to do the work, who is interested in helping their vulnerable communities, right? How can they start? How can they even get funding?
Well, and that's the big question about the Bahamas. The funding stream doesn't exist as best as it could in the Bahamas that it does here. So it's like comparing apples to oranges. Because I think so much of the work that is done in communities and places like the Bahamas and the Caribbean is unloaded onto the government, right? So if you have disabilities, it's like social Department of Social Services mm-hmm. and all of these things, whereas the Department of Social Services don't share the funding, don't share the resources that allows grassroots organizations to say, hey, this is what we want. Because these organizations have to be led by the people themselves. So the best way to do that is to allow someone, whatever disability they have, whatever need they see, is to give them the support, give them the funding, give them the resources for them to advocate on their behalf. Because we can never know what someone is going through unless we are a part of that group. And I think in the Bahamas, we do it the opposite way, right? Where government gives money to agencies to help certain people, but the people who are helping those people don't have that lived experience. So it's like heading a food program when you've never had to wait and on the food line in your life. Right. Or allowing someone to head immigration, an immigrant serving agency when they've never been an immigrant. So as much as they may have the best of intentions, they won't know what that's like. So what we need to do in the Bahamas is create that culture of grassroots and community organizing. So where groups of people get together and say, hey, we want to do X, Y, and Z. So we're going to put ourselves together and commit for 3 to 5 years to do this work. That's the one way that I think that it can be done. And aside from not being able to apply for funding in the Bahamas, there's tons of funding that's available for the Caribbean through Pan American Health Organization to other organizations outside of the Bahamas. But I think the first step is the hardest, and that is actually becoming a legally registered organization.
Okay, that's interesting. So And I want to bring this conversation closer to home, because you mentioned lived experience, right? And you had lived in the Bahamas as a child of immigrants who migrated to the
Bahamas. I was an immigrant child, because I wasn't born in the Bahamas. Yes. So I was an immigrant child myself, yeah.
And I'm trying to understand if such a group even could be allowed in the Bahamas. And let me explain this part, right? We have a huge immigration problem here, right? And we have two sets of immigration issues. We have those who are illegal immigrants, and those who are what I'll call Bahamian and waiting, meaning that they're either born here and they're waiting on their citizenship and papers and whatever it is. And there are even a subgroup of persons who just lost in the system. You know, they've been here for God knows how, 20, 30, 40 years, right? And I know that you speak about justice and equality for all, and that everyone should have some type of rights. But in our cultural system, how can a Bahamian in waiting have rights? And what can your group do to a group like what you do to assist them?
That's a good question. I think it goes back to what Ubuntu is all about, in that you are human because I'm human, and I'm human because you're human. And if I don't treat you as a human being, then I myself cannot say that I am a human being. Every single person, every breathing person, I shouldn't even say breathing person, because if you commit a crime against a body of someone who's been deceased, you can be charged with indecency to a dead body, right? So every single person has the right to be treated like a human being. And when we look at what are those rights, like what are human rights, and I think it's right to education, right to believe, whatever religion, to have religious freedom to believe and practice, right? And right not to be persecuted for who you are. So whether you're Haitian, you're Bahamian, you're Jamaican, not to be persecuted for that, not to be harassed. We look at housing. So when we're saying that these people should have rights, what we need to think about is how they are treated and making sure that they are treated in a humane manner. So if they do not qualify for certain things, what can we do to make life better for them? Or how can we help them to make life better? So, for example, let's start with the people who are undocumented, which is whom we say illegal, right? Here, people say undocumented. So think about it. So 150 undocumented Haitians are arrested, captured, however, you know, making their way to the Bahamas. The process, the next process starts telling us if they are treated in a humane manner or not. So more than likely, these people are caught by the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. Sometimes immigration is with them. They are taken to the detention center. From there, from at the detention center, they are they're kept for 3, sometimes to 5 days, or sometimes up to a month, right? And then they are put on a plane on Bahamas Day, and then they are sent back to Haiti. There's very little due process. There's no, hey, why did you get on this boat? Were you trying to escape political political instability? Are you looking for political asylum? Were you, you know, none of that. There's no questioning. They are more than likely not brought before a judge. Some are, most are not. So they are held in custody without ever appearing before any form or of justice, right? To say, this is why I did this. Because when you break the law, you have the right to appear to say, I plead guilty, I plead not guilty. This is why I did this. This is why I did not do this. This is what I want people to know. That due process is not given. It's not there. We all know this, right? You try to enter the Bahamas, you get caught, you sent to the detention center, and after a few days or a few weeks, sometimes months or years, you are sent back to Haiti.
I'm speaking.
So, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't want to disrupt you, but we're speaking to Dulita Datters, who is a advocacy organizer in Alberta, Canada. She is, and forgive me for this, because I know you corrected me already, but just for explanation of the my audience, she's technically a being of Haitian descent, even though she didn't go through the process of naturalization. But my point is, she has the culture of the Bahamas. She grew up here. So in this conversation, she is technically Bahamian. So I just want to say that so I can bring it home. But I have a caller here who would like to ask you a question. Go ahead, caller.
For sure.
Caller, can you hear me?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, there's no such thing as Bahamian individual. It does not exist in our constitution. There's no such thing as technically a Bahamian. No such thing in our constitution. See, the problem I have is, and the lady is giving misleading information right off the top. Now, Canada may have some problems. Fine, you deal with that over there. In the Bahamas constitution, it says no man, woman, or child shall have their labor exploited, or have their lives deprived, or be made a bondman or slave. No man, woman, or child. Now, there are specific things that a person has to do to be a citizen. Not everybody born in the Bahamas is a citizen. Not everybody washed up on our shores is a citizen. These people know what they are doing. They're trying to take advantage of the generosity of the Bahamian people. While I'm not saying they're not entitled to due process, the Constitution specifically says that. They're entitled to due process. But the point is, you have persons who are using certain things and other people being involved in illegal activity, trying to get people in here, and so forth. And it's not good for the Bahamian people. When you come to the Bahamas, you have the Bahamian way of life. And you got the Canadian way of life. And there are certain issues, Brother Newry, that are happening in Canada that do not apply to us. I've noticed with these people always talking about what somebody else is doing in another country. The government is very apt to do this. What we see happening, the nations around us, what people are doing in Canada, what people are doing in the United States. We have peculiar problems here, Newry, that we need to sit down and discuss. Centerville has certain problems. Bainetown has certain problems. Englishton has certain problems. We don't even take the time to consider what's happening in our own country. We're always looking at what somebody else is doing somewhere else. And then you have these strangers, these foreigners, these aliens, these outsiders giving information to the government and saying what they think we should be like. But you don't ever ask the people in Centerville. You don't ask the people in Bainetown. You don't ask the people in Englishton. We are the Bahamian people. We have to decide what it is. We're coming up on 50 years. And the same should be the Bahamian way of life. The Commonwealth of the Bahamas, the Bahamian way of life, 50 years in count. But we get so mixed up with what foreigners are telling us. We don't even look at our own constitution. There's no such thing as no Bahamian in waiting. That's nonsense. That's utter nonsense and foolishness. We have to go strictly by our constitution. Even our government doesn't go by the constitution. We have what is called a deputy prime minister. There's no such thing in the constitution. We got some what called state ministers. No such thing in the constitution. We have allowed this crap to go on for too long. And so people want to take advantage of us. That has to stop. Thank you, Brother Neuer.
Thank you very much for calling. Dadas, do you support or do you agree with illegal immigration here to the Bahamas?
So first of all, let me just state that I was not in any way saying what happens in Canada needs to be directly replicated in the Bahamas. I do understand that Canada is different, and Canada itself has issues, which is why we do the work that we do. And secondly, I just want to bring the point of how the good gentleman decided to refer to me, these people, right? Like those people, and these foreigners, these illegals, these strangers, as if to say, why are you in this conversation? And that is a part of the problem that I have felt and other people have felt. So you could be, and as he said, you know, you could be, there's no such thing as being in waiting, but except that there is. You have people who were born in the Bahamas who have waited until they were 18, applied, and still have yet to this day being given any form of status, right? Like, not even rejected. They just haven't been given anything. They haven't been responded to. So what are they? They were born in the Bahamas, two Haitian parents, and are now awaiting some form of status. And you can live in the Bahamas for all your life, for most of your life. And you could rush with the Saxons or with the Valley. You could do everything that's a Bahamian. But because someone says, hey, your parents are Haitian, right? Or you don't have the paperwork to show that you are Bahamian. I still have my Haitian passport. I've had Bahamian permit to reside in the Bahamas. I've had permit to live in the Bahamas. I've never apply to become a citizen of the Bahamas. But I want to bring it to just the way the gentleman spoke, right? Othering people, your people, you people, and just the tone that was used. I do not support illegal, undocumented migration. I should say not illegal migration.
Okay.
And I don't support it for a few reasons. One is because I understand all too well the trauma of communities that have lost so many people on the open seas. I don't think that people understand the trauma that communities, families go through when you hear that a boat arrived in the Bahamas and 60 people lost their lives, women and children included. In Puerto Rico just the other day, there were Haitians who were trying to make their way there, and I believe it was 10 of them who passed away. The Haitian community have, you know, because you're constantly wondering, well, did my brother or did my sister take a boat and try to come here? And now I have to go identify their bodies. So people believe that it's just, it's something that we do willingly to get on a boat on the open seas, the open shores, and to just take a journey that takes more than 3 days on the open seas. It's not something that's nice. It's not something that people just willingly want to do. If whatever it was that they were leaving was just as bad as them getting on that boat and making that journey for 3 to 5 days, and then not knowing what they will meet on the open seas or when they arrive on shore. So I want people, when they're thinking of these things as irritated as you can be, to also think about what those people are going through. Yes, we don't want illegal immigrants. We don't want, you know, people coming up with the informal settlements and all of these things. But at the root of the problem, we need to ask, why is it that people are leaving? How can we ensure that they no longer put themselves at risk to do this, so that we, the country, no longer have to deal with these, the trauma? Like, imagine the Defense Force officers who have to literally pull out these bodies time after time after time again. That plays on their psyche. So I do not support undocumented people making that trip, because I understand the risk all too well and the trauma that is often associated with that.
And you spoke about rights to education, rights to health care, rights to not being persecuted, you know? And yeah. And I want to explore that. And I see we have a number of callers, and I'll get to you shortly. And how can a children of migrants move to the Bahamas and think and assume right to be educated inside a public school?
I don't think they think that they do. I think like most people, like my parents, they were just hoping, right? I want to give my child a better way of life. I'm hoping that this country will give us the grace to educate our children. So I don't think it's you need to educate my child who is undocumented, because unlike my siblings, I was not born in the Bahamas. So in order for me to attend Naval Walker and GHS, my parents had to apply for a permit to reside while attending Mabel Walker, a permit to reside while attending government high school, a permit to reside while attending COB. But I think the question has never been addressed to the community, which goes back to say, what is happening? We know why Haitians are leaving, but there's never been that that sit down, city leaders, sit down with even with the Haitian government. And I've said it time and time and time again. The Bahamas government will go to Haiti. We will sign memorandums of, I say we as if the guy just.
We understand. No, no, no. We is we. You're behaving. Yeah. And especially for this conversation. Yeah.
Right. And we will, the Bahamas government will sign memorandums of understanding with the Haitian government and not discuss these issues. You can go back and read some of the memorandums of understanding. They've discussed in some form trade. They've discussed diplomatic relations, but never have they said, okay, we have 50,000 students here who are under 18. What can we do together to ensure that they are given education? How can we ensure that when they come back to Haiti, that they are also educated? Because once they reach 18, as the good gentleman said, with the Constitution, they have a right to apply to the Minister of Immigration to become citizens. But those questions have never been the conversations have never been given. And so we just keep, everybody just keeps getting upset and angry, not listening to each other and blaming the other person. So Haitians blaming Bahamians, Bahamians blaming Haitians, and still nothing gets done. Not even get started. Because I went through that system. I came to the Bahamas, did not speak a lick of English, was put in the dumbest stream, like the lowest stream. And I basically had to teach myself English by reading Charles Dickens' book, Oliver Twist, for like 3 to 4 months. Fortunately for me, I had amazing teachers at Mabel Walker who saw something in me. I don't know what it was. But not everyone is given that opportunity. And then when these kids, when they turn 18 and it's time for them to apply for Bahamian citizenship, we want them to speak perfect English, right? We want them to speak perfect English. We want them to know everything about the Bahamas, but yet we're saying they shouldn't be in school. Get the school fee, you know, like get them to apply, get them to do all of these things, but something has to be done. They're there regardless.
So you're saying there should be a system.
Even there should be a system.
Instead of being oblivious to people, ignoring what the issues are.
Just set up a pathway to say, okay, if your child, because if the child is under 18, I think under the UN Convention, they are protected, right? Until you're 18, you're not protected. So once you're 18, children have to, you know, be educated. If they're, maybe in the Bahamas, it's 16. Right. So set up a system. You need to go to the Department of Immigration. Your child needs to be registered. There may be an out of country fee or whatever have you. So instead of paying $50, they may have to pay $150 and blah, 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 blah. But there has to be a system as opposed to just sitting and hoping and wishing that they would just disappear.
Dallas, we have another caller who wants to ask a question. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm listening to the nice lady, but everything she was saying, and what came to mind is that if her, a group that she has there in Canada, have they ever thought about going to Haiti and probably having this conversation with the person there, letting them know how dangerous it is to take that trip, letting them know that there's a large possibility of them being sent back, and so on and so forth. Because I think this is a conversation needs to start there, because they are coming here. So if you can stop them before they come here, and, you know, as hard as she's working to help those she can, I think her work would be better done in Haiti, where they can try to better their country or their community one house at a time, and work with those persons from that angle. And then, you know, understand me, and it would help, I think it would help across the board, because everybody is saying for the other country to do it, but how about someone like her or persons like her? And try to start to teach these persons the danger of this trip and the likelihood of losing their lives or losing their children's lives and so on and so forth, and being sent back. So I think this is a conversation needs to start there in Haiti to try and stop the track.
Thank you very much, Gwala. Go ahead, Dadas.
I appreciate that question. And it is actually something that I've tried to do for a few years now. I remember a few years ago, I connected with an organization. It's a Haitian justice defense fund that is based in Haiti. And so they take on human rights in Haiti. And this is where lived experience comes into play. Because Nuri, you know me, and I've always been as hard on the Haitian community. I think even harder on the Haitian community than I am on the Bahamian community, as to say, what is our duty to self? Mm-hmm. I am who have always said, why is it that we don't run ads, and we, as in the Haitian Bahamian community or whatever you want to call us, run ads in Haiti, telling people about how dangerous it is, because not everybody knows, right? So they are promised a seat on the boat that only 40 people will get on. And then you show up, you've already sold all of your possessions, and you show up and suddenly it's 150 people on that boat. And you are guaranteed a job. And, you know, sometimes, because the other thing that a lot of people forget is, so there are people, there are undocumented people who come by boat, but there are also people who overstay after applying for visas and stuff. These people are promised jobs. Mm-hmm. So they pay money thinking that they are legally applying and will have a work permit or another sort of permit waiting for them once they get to the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. Because people sell people's dreams. Like, we know this, mm-hmm. right? You get sold in. And so I've said, why can't we run ads, Haitian Bahamian community, the community in the U.S., you know, South Florida, we run ads on the radios. We hold campaigns to tell people how dangerous it is to take this up, and to explain to people to actually go where the boats are, because we know where they're coming from, and to host community events, community campaigns, town halls, whatever have you, to say, hey, when you're getting on this boat, this is what to expect, and to show some of the pictures, because they don't always make it back home. And you would be surprised what the gentleman told me. He's an American working, American lawyer working in Haiti. And he said, that's easy for you to say. It's easy for you to say, for me to come back to Haiti now and say, don't take the boat, when my parents did. Mm. And now I'm saying, because I'm in a situation where I got an education and I have, I'm doing this, for me to go back and say, no, don't do this. And he said, you think those people are going to listen to you? Because in their mind, the grass is always greener on the other side, right? You made it. So if you made it, I can make it too. And it hit me, because he was right. Like, I can't go back to Haiti and say, don't take the boat, when my parents took the boat or took the plane and spend their 25 or 30 years there. So it has to be a deeper conversation. And I think part of that is, and she is right in that, we have to go back to Haiti, and we have to build Haiti so that people wouldn't want to leave the country. So not just that they shouldn't take the boat, but that there's something that can keep them there.
Yes, I'm speaking to Elita Dattis, who is a community advocacy organizer. And I have another caller. So caller, go ahead with your question. Caller, can you hear me?
Elita, this dark, you know, voice.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Justice, law, and order in this country. The thing is, I listened to the young lady, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, let me show you something. I was living in the United States at one time, right? And had two green cards. They called me in to make me a citizen of the United States, right? When I look back, I had a lot of family in the United States, by the way. I was living with one of my aunts during that time. We spawned over there. Our brothers and sisters lives in the United States, the American citizen, brothers, of course, and a lot of nieces and nephews, grandnieces and great-grandnephews and nieces and stuff like that. But you know what I did?
What did you do?
I sit in front of the guy when he asked me, you know, when he told me that, you know, they want to give me a citizenship. When I look back at the Bahamas, first he said, when he told me that, he said, but I have to read. When I look back at the Bahamas, I say, no, I'll never leave my home for someplace else. My point is, if that lady went to Canada, got all the education, she's supposed to be committed to her country. And you know, the thing is, in our country, right, our leaders are too slack, okay? our leader is supposed to be looking out for our people. When you're going to put our people first, then I got to respect you. But when you're not interested in looking out for our own people, you're looking out for other people. I mean, the thing is, I don't respect you because my people got to live in order to help other people how to live. And that's not happening. And what that lady, and a lot of people like that lady should do when she has gotten an education. Mind you, I used to teach Haitians when I could see, right? I love them. But the thing is, you got to look out for your own country. You don't put on foot in my country and try to tell me how to live, what I should do for what I should do. We even ain't reached where we're trying to go yet. You see, so that's a conflict.
Thank you very much, Freeman.
Thank you.
I have a next caller. Go ahead. Straight to the call. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Go ahead. I can hear you.
How you doing, everybody?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Go ahead, Sparky.
You know, there's so many issues in this, and I don't understand why we still debate this over and over and over. Because we don't get over this for every question, every statement in regard to this from time immemorial. First of all, this issue about being here until you're 19. Or 18 to apply. They said you got the right to apply when you get 18, right? Did they say that?
Go ahead, Fafia. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. They said apply. They didn't say that the Bahamas cabinet or government will give it to you. You got the right to apply. But while you're going to be here for 18 years, where's the legal of daddy and mommy during the 18 years? You were born in New Providence to an illegal mother and father. We don't marry it. And then they could be here illegally for 18 years. How come your mommy and your daddy was here for 18 years while you were getting free schooling, free health care, free everything for 18 years? How come mommy and daddy was in the shanty town and did not go back home? And then when you get 18, you come back here and apply because you were born there. Remember, your mother and father, the Bible said, the sins of the parents would be passed down to the children. So what you might be suffering now because your father and your mother broke our laws in the beginning. They sat here for 18 years while you grew up. And although you were born here or your siblings were born here, that is when they have the right to apply. But they should go back home because you're illegal in the first place. You broke the laws of our land. That's the problem I'm getting. I don't know. How come y'all could squat all the shanty towns in my country and I got to go to the bank where I was born, where my parents were born? I got to borrow money. And at 71, I'm still paying a mortgage off. And you living free in my town? Something wrong.
Thank you very much, Becky. Dallas. Go ahead. Dude, I allow you to respond. I want to ask you a question after that.
For sure, for sure. So to the first caller who had said, I can't remember what it was exactly that he said, but Nelson Mandela said something. Nelson Mandela said, the way that you treat the least in your country, whether it be animal or people, will tell you the way that you will be treated one day.
Good. I have a quick break right now, Dadis, and I want you to go back to that question. But let me just get this break over with so we can come right back.
Okay.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
One & Sewage Corporation advises customers residing in the areas of Blue Hill Road North, East Street, Palmdale, Shirley Street, Kemp Road, Village Road, Bay and West Bay Streets that the corporation will commence disconnection of water supply on Monday, June 20th, 2022 in the mentioned areas. To avoid disconnection of the water supply, customers whose accounts are in arrears or who have not honored their financial agreements are advised to see that their accounts are brought up to date or risk the disconnection of their water supply without further notice.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
In Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM. And I'm speaking to Dwilita Dattis, who is a community organizer in Alberta, Canada, who actually works in terms of justice and equality for all and making sure that people have equal participation within her community. And my question to you, Dattis, is what should Haitian Bohemians, and I stress in that word, it's not Haitian nationals now I'm speaking about, but Haitian Bohemians, Bohemians of Haitian descent, should be doing in terms of their community and advocating for equality and equal rights and stuff like that?
A whole lot.
Give me some examples.
But just before, I wanted to respond to the last gentleman who called. There's a misconception that most of the documented. Most of them actually hold either work permits or spousal permits.
We found that out in Abaco. Yes, we found that majority of them have status
most
at some
of
point.
Them have some sort of status. Yes, of course, you have those who are undocumented, but for the majority of those, they do have some form of status. So whether they're work permit, permanent residency, they are citizens. They are people who are citizens of the Bahamas that we think are illegal because their last name is Joseph and they don't speak English the way we do, right? So that's a misconception. What can Haitian Bohemians do? I think for me, I've always stressed that we have to be able to build home. And when I say home, I'm using it in the double sense, and home is wherever you lay your pillow, your head on at night. Right. So people always say, go back to Haiti and fix up Haiti. And then when you do, they say, well, you're the Bahamas and you all ain't giving back nothing to the Bahamas. You all need to build here. So it's like, well, what do you want me to do? So for me, it has always been to contribute where you are at the moment. So if you in Exuma, try to uplift Exuma, get involved in civic and community duties in Exuma, try to help build up Exuma, work in Exuma, go to school in Exuma, build community there. But at the same time, you're trying to help where your parents are from. You're trying to help your cousins and friends back home. But the issue comes back because we know Bohemians always say the Haitians them make money and they send everything back to Haiti. Right. So it's like supposed to do two things at the same time. Mine is get involved whichever way you can, because there will always be naysayers. There will always be someone telling you how to do what you want to do, when to do it and where to do it and all of these things. But I found that a lot of Haitian Bohemians don't know Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have never visited Haiti. So the only images they have of Haiti are the file footages that ZNNS has played from like 1992. Post Aristide, right? They've never been there. So to them, it's this primitive place. It's this full of zombies and voodoo and all of it. So there's not that kinship to the land of Haiti. They don't know the true history of Haiti. Yes, they celebrate Pride, Haitian Flag Day. But you ask most of them celebrating and waving the flag, they don't know about the work of people like Toussaint Louverture or Jean-Jacques Dessalines or Ancestor Toya and these amazing people who did amazing things. They don't know about, and the Dominican Republic was once upon a time, one land, right? And that Haiti freed the Dominican Republic from Spain, and that's a whole other issue. They don't understand and they don't know how Haiti contributed to the independence of Greece. They don't know how Haiti was one of the catalysts for World War II to free the Jews. They don't know how Haiti was one of the first countries in the Americas to say yes, that they were willing to take Jews.
And that is, most Bohemians have heard this before, but we want to know, how can we live with Haitian Bohemians here? What is the responsibility of Haitian Bohemians?
I think we have to sit down and have this true conversation without the hatred. Because I think that's one of the biggest things, where the way that people talk about other people, it's so hate-filled that we can't have that conversation together. And we have to think of years, because so far, one of the best tactics that people have used is fear, where you're blaming somebody else for what is happening to you, right? So the government will always say, the Haitians are the one who are draining the school system. The Haitians are the one who are draining the health system. The same thing happens in the U.S., right? Blame the Mexicans, blame the Cubans. And it's only because they don't want to be held accountable to you Because if you had a good school system, if you had an amazing health system, there would not have to be a blame shifted. So it's having those conversations.
Let me get this call for 30 seconds. Go ahead, caller. It's going to be quick. 30 seconds, caller. Go ahead. You have 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think she's kind of contradicting herself in a way. She says shifting the blame, but many the implementation of tend to blame the Bahamas and the behemoth in our system and not putting the blame directly where it's supposed to, the parents who made the illegal trip. But yet, you will see persons like the young lady there quick to instruct and blame behemoths and the behemoth system for, oh, not equal rights, but yet not going back to the source. And that's the only thing. And it's a kind of disingenuous argument because most persons, they don't just come here. They already made contact with people living here, and they know exactly where they're going.
Thank you very much, Carla. That is, I already ran out of time. I am committed to inviting you back here on Friday at 11 o'clock if you're free. So we'll speak to that and continue this conversation. But I want to have a conversation about the responsibility of Haitian Bahamians, those people with status, and their advocacy group within that community. So the next time you're here, we'll do that. Thank you very much for listening to Guardian Radio. And thank you very much to my friend Duelita Datas. Have a good day.